Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Greetings, or may I say bonjour in Potawatomi, to those joining us for today's Indigenous Perspectives show. I'm Randy Kwiatkowski, an enrolled Potawatomi tribal member and the co-host of Indigenous Perspectives, along with Carolyn Schmidt. Today's discussion features two couples of mixed marriage, that is, one Indigenous and one non-Indigenous partner. We'll be exploring what we can learn about dynamic Indigenous cultures today and the personal growth of individuals and couples through looking at the experiences of off-reservation mixed marriages. Perhaps what we're going to deal with today is a little bit counterintuitive because there's a prevailing cultural notion that when people marry outside of their ethnic group or their religious group, that some kind of dilution of culture, some kind of loss of culture is at great risk. I think what we're going to find today is that that isn't always the case, and sometimes it's the opposite.
Indigenous Perspectives originates from Vermont in the United States and is located on lands that the Abenaki people call Ndakina. It's the unceded traditional territory of the Abenaki people, who for thousands of years have been stewards of the lands found here and across the border in Quebec province in Canada. We welcome today's guests, Patricia LeBon Herb and Guntram Herb, an off-res mixed marriage couple who live in Vermont. They'll each introduce themselves. Patty, you're the Indigenous one, like Randy, so I think you should go first.
Thank you, Carolyn. Miigwech, ani, Nindishnikas Zibingokwe, Nindodem Miknuk, Nindonjiba, Banweting Ojibwa, Mackinac, Ninda, Middlebury, Vermont. What I just said in Anishinaabewin is the customary way to introduce oneself. My name is River Woman. I am from the Turtle Clan. I'm a member of the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians. My ancestors come from Mackinac Island, Michigan. I currently live in Middlebury, Vermont. I will tell you a little bit about myself. So I look at it, it's like the front yard is where I present myself to the world. The backyard, physically and metaphorically speaking, is where I go to figure things out in simple language. It's a slow process. I am of the Turtle Clan after all. In the backyard are the medicines, plants, flowers, wildly rooted to earth, where there is an abundance of trees, where I lay tobacco down and pray. A river flows behind the house. It is no coincidence that I'm named Zibingokwe, which means river woman in Ojibwe. In the backyard, I listen and try to understand a complex story. I look up to the sky from where I sit, lie or stand, whether it be indoors or out. Every day has something new to teach me. I look out and visit with my grandfather and mother, whom I lost through the assimilation process. I have more rights and freedom in regards to healing, to exercise my spiritual practices than what they had. Think about that for a second. My grandfather was born at the turn of the century. In order for many to survive, they needed to assimilate. My grandfather was able to go to college, and later he worked at the shipyards. I have more freedom than what he and my mother had, and for this I'm grateful. We are Native Americans. However, the outside world wants to define us is their story, often a false narrative, which does not concern me much anymore. In high school and college, I did not have one Native American teacher. Times are changing. We are moving forward, recovering what was lost. We are evolving and reclaiming ourselves, becoming active citizens in the modern world. I go to the creek to visit my recently deceased brother, whose indigenous name is Wewazi Babunsin, also known as Chuck. His name means the glistening stones along the riverbank. That is where his name lies. Our native names are important. We grow into them and say them when we connect and honor others. My backyard is where I weep, laugh, sing, harvest. Relearning are not lost language. I go to our medicine wheel where I stand in silence to connect to all living things of this earth, its people, plants, animals, water, sky, and earth. A ceremony after loss, a ceremony for what is here today. It is a kind of a homecoming. I am a Belgian Native American woman, Anishinaabe, Ojibwa, Odawan, young elder living in Middlebury, Vermont. Together with my husband and grown children, we are on a transformational journey. We all have our stories, and this one is mine, Miigwech.
Thanks, Patty, for sharing the poem with us. Like me, I think you find it sometimes easier to express what you're going through and your journey in writing than sort of spontaneously speaking, and I love the way you can get so much into a poem. So what we're going to do is jump off from your poem about a personal journey that involves Guntram to discussing, as I said in the introduction, an exploration of how that partnership works and how together you've grown into this awakening. So Guntram, let us hand off this part now to you. Why don't you introduce yourself so the listeners know who the other half of this relationship is?
Miigwech, thank you, Randy. my name is Guntram Herb. I'm a geographer, teach geography and global studies at Middlebury College, where I'm a professor in the chair right now. And together, Patty and I have been on this journey to understand the indigenous heritage that is so much part of her. And it's come out more recently because I've been able to incorporate some of this in my professional work as a scholar. And we actually had a project that we worked on together on indigenous borderland. And for me, this is really a journey into learning about a different way of looking at the world. And maybe one of the poignant things here is when you learn that stones are animate in Anishinaabe Mohin, you start looking at the world in a very, very different way suddenly, because all the assumptions that you had, all the things that you took for granted, all the facts that you have learned to recite and respect become destabilized. And I think that's a very good thing.
Thanks, Guntram. I'm just going to insert a few little pieces of demographic information here so that listeners know what it is we're talking about. In mainstream America, I don't have the exact data for Canada and our First Nations colleagues there, but in the United States, for the white population as identified by the census, about 80 to 90% of whites marry other whites. And for black African Americans, it's approximately the same kinds of numbers, you know, 80-90% marry within their racial group. For indigenous people, it's about 50%. So on the surface of it, again, to go back to the introduction, it would appear as if indigeneity, being a native or a First Nation person, is under assault of dilution or this process of assimilation, you know, through marriage. But as you just already pointed out, and we'll get deeper into this, our our process of discovery that Patty is writing about and I'm writing about in my book probably wouldn't happen the way it's happened had it not been for a supportive partner. I know when I wrote my book, I could not have done it, and it would not have come out as well as it did if I didn't have, you know, a partner in the process. I actually wanted to make her a co-author. Patty, why don't you back up and give us a little bit on how your writing and your thinking and feeling and awakening is impacted by the person sitting next to you.
Well, we met way back. What year was that?
1981.
And I lived in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis. And I didn't grow up with my mother, but with my father, and who was a Belgian immigrant. And at my high school, there probably were many Native Americans, but it was something that I think in those days people were hiding. And I knew I was Indian, but I didn't know how to go about being an Indian. And so anyway, but it was always with me. And then I went to Berkeley and I met Guntram, and I gave him my background and I told him that I was, you know, Ojibwa. And he thought that was so cool. And he goes, whoa, that's something to be really proud of. And I was, but, and it's through as I got older, I started exploring more, reading more. And then actually when I was 50, after our kids were in college, I actually, because I'm part of a tribe, Sault Ste. Marie Tribe of Chippewa Indians, and that's another long story that I won't get into how I got connected with them. But I was very shy and very scared, and they were like, what took you so long to come here? You know, I was welcomed with open arms. There was a language table, an Indian cultural center. I received an eagle feather at
Eagle Staff.
At an Eagle Staff gathering. And it was just a life-changing experience.
Wow. So that this is incredible, Patty. And Randy, can you give a brief summary on how you've been regrowing your Indigenous roots? It's not quite as dramatic in some ways as Patty's, but it still has had an impact on both of us.
Well, in many ways, it's a similar progression. You know, for most of my life and most of my adult life, I was aware that we had Indian ancestry, but it was not in any way a central part of my thinking or identity. You know, I grew up in an all-white suburban neighborhood. I mean, there were literally no non-whites, and almost everyone was Christian, with maybe one family exception. I don't think I saw a Black person until I was ready to go off to college. So I grew up, I call it, the American urban, suburban vanilla experience. And then, in recent years, approximately the last decade, my Indigenous heritage has, I won't say snuck up, because sometimes it's, intruded, rather vociferously into my life and consciousness, and just transformed my thinking and feeling and ways of engaging the world. And again, I don't think I would have navigated these waters the same way had Carolyn not been there to reflect with me, and very often to participate in events, such as the visitations of wild creatures or other than human kin who constantly come and make their presence known to us. So that's my background.
So I'd be interested in hearing from Patty and Randy about your struggles of reawakening in terms of your physical appearance. Neither of you look stereotypically, quote unquote, Native American. You're both from Woodlands tribes that have a long history of mixing and mingling. So how has this been a factor as you've worked on developing and exploring your Native American heritage and bouncing off others?
Should I go first? You know, for a while there, it kind of was an issue with me, but it isn't, funny enough, it isn't anymore. Even when I am amongst Ojibwa, Odawan people, they're often light-skinned like me. And the Abenaki, the local Abenaki people, I have the same coloring as many of them. And we really check each other out when we see each other. It's like, yeah, you're light-skinned too. And you have to remember that we're from the North Lake Woods region. So people that live in colder climates have a lighter complexion, as it were. And I think that applies to Native Americans as well. Some Native Americans. And if you look all across the board, if you go from Maine all the way to Alaska, we all look different. And that's what's so beautiful about us. You know, we've learned to blend and assimilate and evolve. And I look at the whole assimilation process has been kind of a good thing for me, not necessarily a bad thing. But the thing that has always bothered me is that what my ancestors the last 400 years went through. And I have seen pictures of my grandfather's people, and they were darker. But through time and assimilation, and then living in the more northern hemisphere, I just feel I became a light-skinned person.
Yeah, I've struggled the same way. Literally the opening sentences of my book are "Mirror, mirror on the wall, am I really an Indian after all?" And I, for several years, looked in the mirror, and as I say in my book, what looks back at me looks more like my adopted Lithuanian ancestors. I go to Lithuania, and everybody thinks I'm, you know, a real Lithuanian, even though I was adopted. So the irony is my adopted family thinks I look right. And, you know, my sort of blood ancestry sometimes, you know, will point at my eyes or my hair color and make not an insulting, but a sort of quizzical comment about, well, you don't really exactly match what I expected. But I think, Patty, you and I both know, and our partners know, and this is where the confirmation and help has come from. It's not what's on our face or on our skin color or our hair color. It's what's in our heart. And that's been the most beautiful part of this journey, is sharing that awakening and those feelings and those sensibilities with a partner who will very often see, feel, and hear things that are so profoundly, quintessentially indigenous that yes, they can sometimes knock us over. And did we not have a witness to what just happened, and we told people about it, people would say, oh, you're imagining it, or you made that up, or you're hallucinating. Yeah. It's really nice to have an objective, non-Indigenous person in the household looking out and say, yep, that rainbow landed in the same place for the third time. You didn't imagine that. So, you know, this has been a vital part of my awakening, absolutely vital.
Yes. And yes, I'd like to bring in also a concept that has come to mean a lot to me. We heard a two-spirit member of the Lakota Nation speak at Middlebury College a couple of years ago, and they talked about the whole idea of rejecting the male-female binary and being their own unique person, affirming all of their roots and their connections and their political activism and their self-presentation and just everything. And so challenging the binaries, whatever they are, has become something that has really, I've been opening my eyes to in the last couple of years. And one of those binaries is the Indigenous / non-Indigenous binary. So there is the question of what's in your heart, what's in your sense of your heritage and your ancestors. And it's all a complicated mix. I know there are places I can't go because I don't have any Indigenous heritage, but there are many other connections that I can make, either be let in by Randy or find my own way, and, you know, he catches up to me. It's pretty incredible.
Yes, so, Guntram, do you find yourself on the wrong side of the Indigenous, non-Indigenous binary of other?
I clearly am not Indigenous. I am aware of that. I am fully European. And I know people are trying to do DNA tests and things of that sort to figure out what it is. I think this essentialism is really misguided, because it's really about, I think, a worldview and embracing of heritage. And to me, to be welcome, that people talk to me and that I can be have a respectful conversation is a way to enter this space of indigeneity. And that works really well.
Through education, which is his goal.
Okay, that's a great comment to close out our first segment, and it will be a segue into segment two. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Citizen Potawatomi Nation's Cultural Heritage Center, located near Shawnee, Oklahoma, features 11 immersive galleries with digital and interactive exhibits. Visitors learn about the tribe's history from origin to modern days and gain an understanding of Citizen Potawatomi oral traditions and lifeways. Admission is always free. Open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visit the Cultural Heritage Center on the web at PotawatomiHeritage.com.
Period poverty. If you don't know what it is, you should, because you can help. One in four American women struggle to purchase menstruation products this year, resulting in missed school and even loss of income. The Native American Women's Nonprofit Kwek Society cares enough to give Native American students and communities their period products, and they do it across North America. Please help women with your time, donations, or supplies to maintain their dignity and celebrate their strength during moon time. Visit kweksociety.org. That's K-W-E-K Society.
Listen up. The source for information and inspirational items about the struggle and wisdom of Indigenous people is the Syracuse Cultural Workers. They are committed to peace, sustainability, social justice, feminism, and multiculturalism, and they create beautiful visual materials like calendars, t-shirts, cards, and more, including their Greetings and Thanks to the Natural World according to poster that offers daily grounding for our relationship to the earth and its many fellow beings. Get so many wonderful items. Go there now. SyracuseCulturalWorkers.com.
Randy Krakowski's book, Without Reservation, describes his spiritual awakening as a Native American. It's a powerful, life-changing story where Randy shares his journey into the realm of ancestral Native American connections and explores his encounters with Mother Earth. The book actually helps you how to reconnect with your ancestors to rekindle your access to ancestral wisdom and nature. Available in print, ebook, and audiobook format, Get Without Reservation by Randy Krakowski from all major booksellers. For more information, visit Randy Krakowski.
Feel you have no control over life? There's something you can do to make a difference for you, your family, and community. Stay positive and take a break from the dark side. Uplifting and enlightening. Listen to the positive side of podcasts. HRNradio.com.
Welcome back to Indigenous Perspectives, talking today with Patricia LeBon Herb and Guntram Herb about off-reservation mixed marriages. Guntram, as a geographer, you've worked together with Patty on your Border Rights, Border Lands project, which documents and highlights the challenges of Native nations, including Patty's Ojibwe community, divided by the U.S.-Canadian border. Can you tell us about that project and how you connected your academic work with Indigenous experiences?
Yes, thank you. So this project really started in 2010 when we spent time with Patty's tribe in Sault Ste. Marie, and we encountered the divisive effect of the border. You know, we would go to a sweat across the border. We would attend an Eagle staff gathering the other way, coming back. And going back and forth, the question, what's your nationality, always was an issue that rung deep. For me, as being German and American, for one, this is a question I always have to engage with. But more importantly, one of the Eagle staff gatherings we went to started late because people, some of the members had been stopped at the border and hassled for having Eagle parts. And we were told, well, they shouldn't have stopped us. We have the right to cross with the Che Treaty in 1794. And I had never heard of this. And I wanted to know more about what does it mean to cross border, not just figuratively the border between being indigenous and being non-indigenous, but the border that is put up by the settler states to prevent movement back and forth. And I found that there was extremely minute amount of scholarship on it.
I just want to say one thing that maybe Guntram didn't say, but that it's a tribe that was divided by the border. So it's the Sault Ste. Marie tribe of Chippewa Indians that is divided by a border.
So that's why we had to go back and forth. And having this, knowing that there was a need to understand better about what indigenous communities are going through being divided by these artificial borders, we knew the only way to do this. I mean, I'm a scholar. I do refereed work, et cetera, but this is not about going into archives. This was about to learn from the people themselves. Because who am I as a non-Indigenous person speaking potentially on behalf of them? So our goal was to actually just go and talk to the communities. Not even the word interview, I don't want to put that out there because it was listening. And so Pat and I bought an old camper van, fixed it up, and then traveled from Maine, New Brunswick, all the way to the West Coast and back, and the following summer from Maine, New Brunswick to Alaska and back, and spoke to over 30 communities, listening to them. And it was an experience that was transformative, since we encountered all these different indigenous people who had different cultural protocols, who had different experiences, who had different languages, and trying to be respectful. I would learn a few words here and there and try to speak about it, knowing about cultural protocols, offering tobacco with elders, etc. Those were things that went really, really deep and took me away from the customary field work that you do when you go out in the field or when you go into archives. And for that, it was something that didn't just give me an understanding of the border, but it gave me an understanding of a different worldview and a different approach to it. And in this project, I wanted Patricia, who was part all along, also to contribute and to make her own kind of scholarly contribution. In some ways. So I asked her to write a poem about it and to kind of encapsulate that. Because the things that we have it on a website, all the information, there was a good reason for that. Once it's in a book, it's out there. But you do not want this information to be out there and potentially be disrespectful or contentious from some people. And on a website, I can always put a disclaimer. I can take it down. And so that was from the beginning the reason for having a digital one. I don't want to dominate here. So maybe one way to give you an idea of what this project is about is that the poem that then Patty at the end of our journey wrote really encapsulates what we experienced. And it's a poem that I always read whenever I give a presentation on this as well, because it's so much more concise than anything else.
So, Patty, let's hear it.
I just want to say, like Guntram was, you know, kind of badgering me, and I said, that's not how poetry is. It has to just come to you. And this poem actually did come to me it was not even a draft. And so that's what's so meaningful to this poem, that it just came to me naturally. Okay, the borderland. As we zigzag the U.S. and Canada border from Maine to Seattle and into Alaska, we travel through native lands, families and friends separated, long lines of cars and trucks on land and bridges, close communities divided. Passports to be shown, sunglasses off. Those with a DUI cannot cross over even as passengers or ever again, I heard it said. Sometimes it's a long trek, other times not. Reservations and reserves, two separate lands on one border or another. Veteran elders come to participate at Eagle Staff gatherings, some well into their 90s. Regalia and bundles inside the car, the border patrol, depending who you get, no better now not to go through them. Officers with good training have learned to respect the ways and traditions different from theirs. Indigenous men, women, and children come to participate in a powwow, a celebration, a sacred circle on the other side. First Nations go south. Native Americans go north, First Alaskans go east, North First Nations go west, to participate and celebrate, to give thanks for each other, the earth, the land and waters, animals and trees, stories from another time. Everything done in a circle, intricately sewn regalia, headdresses, jingle dresses, made with feathers, beads, and hide of buffalo, caribou, deer, and seal. Songs and traditions from long ago to say we are one in a circle with no borders.
I just have to say, when Randy and I, we first met Patty and Guntram, when we went to Guntram's presentation at Middlebury College about this journey, blew us away. The information, the respect, and the poem was an important part of the presentation, and, you know, it just all, we just thought it was outstanding. So we said, we have to meet these people. That's how we met.
I wanted to add just one more thing, because I know we're running out of time. This whole project was dedicated to Richard Lewis, an Odawa Potawatomi, and he's also known as Nimki Waiwidom. He was our spiritual guide. He was the one who supported this effort. And the whole project is guided by Minadendamowin, which is respect in the Anishinaabe language. So that's just as a final point.
And that was a fine day when we met you two. That was a wonderful afternoon at Middlebury College.
Well, we will be back in a minute with segment 3.
Located near Shawnee, Oklahoma, Citizen Potawatomi Nation is Potawatomi County's largest employer with a rich history and culture as a sovereign Native nation. Learn more about CPN by visiting its website, which includes information on services for members, tribal enterprises, government and constitution, the newspaper, and much more. All at potawatomi.org. That's Potawatomiorg.
Randy Krakowski's book, Without Reservation, describes his spiritual awakening as a Native American. It's a powerful, life-changing story where Randy shares his journey into the realm of ancestral Native American connections and explores his encounters with Mother Earth. The book actually helps you how to reconnect with your ancestors to rekindle your access to ancestral wisdom and nature. Available in print, ebook, and audiobook format, Get Without Reservation by Randy Krakowski from all major booksellers. For more information, visit randykrakowski.com.
Since 1975, Inner Traditions has been publishing books for the healing and spiritual journey. Their mission is to rediscover, preserve, and protect these spiritual traditions of the world so that humanity will forever have the tools to create a better future that will celebrate and heal the earth. Inner Traditions books, card decks, and other products are available wherever books, ebooks, and audiobooks are sold. Or visit innertradition.com's online bookstore. And while you're there, sign up for their free newsletter to receive special offers. That's innertraditions.com.
Period poverty. If you don't know what it is, you should, because you can help. One in four American women struggle to purchase menstruation products this year, resulting in missed school and even loss of income. The Native American Women's Nonprofit, Kwek Society, cares enough to give Native American students and communities their period products, and they do it across North America. Please help women with your time, donations, or supplies to maintain their dignity and celebrate their strength during moon time. Visit kweksociety.org. That's K-W-E-K Society.
Don't get angry. Anger is a negative emotion that suppresses your immune system that may cause health problems. Make a positive difference by working together to protect and support your family, friends, and community. Take a break from the dark side. Uplifting and enlightening. Listen to the positive side of podcasts. HRNradio.com.
Way high.
Welcome back to Indigenous Perspectives. In this segment, I want each of us to have a chance to tell a brief story of a shared experience and how sharing that experience in the context of our relationship makes it all the richer. Carolyn, why don't you talk about a very recent experience we had that you cued to and I almost missed?
Okay. Less than 2 weeks ago, we were at a graveside ceremony for an incredibly fine person and friend who died sometime in his 90s last fall. So this was the get together with the graveside ceremony with people who had been invited. We'd never been to this place before. It was lovely, sort of country, open fields. And, you know, you're standing around before it starts. We didn't know really anybody else at the ceremony. And then about 3 minutes before it was ready to start, that's when you start thinking it's time to sort of shift over, you know, to the actual grave site. These incredible howls started up. I mean, just unbelievable. And my first thought was, that is the coy wolves calling about his spirit, because coy wolves are a really important part of Randy's experience with connecting with messages from his kin. And I got tears in my eyes. It was just unbelievable. And I said to Randy, oh my God, I thought it was coy wolves starting up in honor of George. The man's name was George Yeager. His last name, Yeager, means hunter. So it turned out that other people said those were huskies. Somebody nearby had huskies, and, you know, but this was incredibly, incredibly loud. They died down just after a few minutes, and then they started up just as the ceremony was ending. We were putting the flowers into the grave and so forth. The howls started up again. It was really unbelievable, and Randy and I were the only ones who were having this emotional reaction and understanding the animals giving this farewell.
So it took me a day to put this together, and I almost missed it, you know, had it not been for Carolyn, you know, I would have just said, oh, huskies. But then I realized Yeager, hunter, you know, that's what it means.
Yes.
You know, here's wildlife honoring a hunter and a man who was, and I don't usually feel comfortable with the term, even in Indigenous culture, you know, he was a Cold War warrior. He served in the U.S. Army as a young man. A panzer division surrendered to him when he stumbled upon them in the woods. you know, he became like a deputy director of a segment of NATO. He negotiated with the Russians on arms deals. You know, he was truly the best that one can imagine a warrior being. You know, and here are half wolf, half dog beings, creatures are other than fellow kin, howling at the top of their lungs, interrupting the minister, who unfortunately shot back at them several times. Oh, shut up. You know, I cringed horribly, you know, because for me, it was, you know, the most honoring part of the ceremony. You know, it was better than the minister. It was, you know, our kin honoring this man. But you know, this is the kind of back and forthness that we have in our relationship. I won't say on a daily basis, but routinely, you know, mutually discovering and helping one another to navigate the reconnections with our kin. So tell us your story.
That's beautiful, that story. Thank you for sharing it.
So for us, the story today is the medicine wheel in our backyard. So this is a place that actually our son, who was healing, was creating with Patty, and set up the site. And it's a place where we go to say prayers, and it's a place that for me, come spring, I go to make it nice, to weed it, to put the stones back. There's different colored stones in there to make it a nice affirmation of a respectful message to the ancestors and the creator that here is a space that we keep sacred, that we keep clean and beautiful. And it brings Patty and I out there whenever there is something that's distressing, a death or a hardship. We go there together. We stand by the medicine wheel and we will offer tobacco and say a prayer, Odopina Niwe Asema, please accept our tobacco, to ask for help. It's a place where I think it connects us to the ancestry of Patty.
Patty, tell us, I mean, you've got this German-born partner who obviously gets spiritual nourishment at your sort of tribal heritage medicine wheel. How did you introduce it to him? What did you have to tell him about it? And what should we tell readers about a medicine wheel so they'll understand the significance of it?
Well, we actually saw a medicine wheel for the first time in St. Ignace in Michigan. And I'm not sure that this is, you know, an Ojibwa, you know, in Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota, if it's in all these places, but it was there in St. Ignace. And what I love about it, it's like a circle and everything's in fours. So you have the four seasons, the four states of being, which is physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, the four directions, east, west, south, and north, the four elements, water, wind, earth, and fire. And then the four sacred herbs, being a sema, cedar, sage, and sweetgrass. And it's just a wonderful place to go. It's in nature. It's amongst a lot of trees. But just quickly, I want to say that I recently learned that red is an animate color in Ojibwe. And when my father died, a cardinal appeared. And in the wintertime, so many cardinals come. And whenever I'm on the phone, if I'm talking to my daughter, the cardinal appears. And I always think that, I think that's so beautiful that red is an animate color, because I look at it as the spirit goes to the red bird. And I hear many people have stories about cardinals, not just indigenous people, people of all races, colors, and creeds. And I just think that's a beautiful thing to have acknowledged, that red is an animate color.
Thanks for sharing that. And thanks for, again, documenting the whole premise of this program, which is that our cultural heritage is being revitalized by sharing with someone who isn't born into it. It bodes well for Native American resilience. We'll be back in a minute for the final segment.
Citizen Potawatomi Nation's Cultural Heritage Center, located near Shawnee, Oklahoma, features 11 immersive galleries with digital and interactive exhibits. Visitors learn about the tribe's history from origin to modern days and gain an understanding of Citizen Potawatomi oral traditions and lifeways. Admission is always free. Open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visit the Cultural Heritage Center on the web at PotawatomiHeritage.com.
Period poverty. If you don't know what it is, you should, because you can help. 1 in 4 American women struggle to purchase menstruation products this year, resulting in missed school and even loss of income. The Native American Women's Nonprofit, Kwek Society, cares enough to give Native American students and communities their period products, and they do it across North America. Please help women with your time, donations, or supplies to maintain their dignity and celebrate their strength during moon time. Visit kweksociety.org. That's K-W-E-K Society.
Listen up. The source for information and inspirational items about the struggle and wisdom of indigenous people is the Syracuse Cultural Workers. They are committed to peace, sustainability, social justice, feminism, and multiculturalism, and they create beautiful visual materials like calendars, t-shirts, cards, and more, including their Greetings and Thanks to the Natural World accordion poster that offers daily grounding for our relationship to the earth and its many fellow beings. Get so many wonderful items. Go there now. SyracuseCulturalWorkers.com.
Randy Krakowski's book, Without Reservation, describes his spiritual awakening as a Native American. It's a powerful, life-changing story where Randy shares his journey into the realm of ancestral Native American connections and explores his encounters with Mother Earth. The book actually helps you how to reconnect with your ancestors to rekindle your access to ancestral wisdom and nature. Available in print, ebook, and audiobook format, Get Without Reservation by Randy Krakowski from all major booksellers. For more information, visit Randy Krakowski.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the final segment of Indigenous Perspectives. We're exploring the question of mixed marriages of a non-Indigenous and an Indigenous person, which invariably raises the question of identity, Indigenous identity, and sharing Indigenous experience. I'd like to start off with Patty reading another poem, which is titled, How Much Indian Are You? And then I'd like Carolyn and Guntram to respond, because this question isn't usually directed at non-Indigenous people, but when you're a partner, in a sense, the question does sort of hang out there. So, Patty, why don't you read your question, and then Guntram and Carolyn, why don't you respond?
Okay, thank you. I'd love to. How much Indian are you? A stone's throw across the river, 20 feathers off the hawk. One fry bread worth, 20 flute songs, a bundle of tobacco, a pint of blood pumped from my mother's heart, according to the chart. The doctor, missionary, author, anthropologist will tell us our ratio if we are authentic or not. Who is telling our story? A distant relative sold land traded for frog skins with a small forest of trees to close the deal. An auntie ran off with a French fur trapper. They moved to town, bringing us forward, then down. Cohabitation, regulation, assimilation, eradication. Papers needed to cross a line. However you measure, I'm keeping my treasure.
Okay, I'll give my comments, which are that to be tremendously respectful of someone else's identity involves accepting it and honoring it, but not trying to be it, but trying to follow the values and the wisdom and the sense of honesty and fair play that you can get inspired by and work from. So I think if someone asked me the question, I would try to flip it for myself. I try to flip it around and say what counts is not the fact that I'm not indigenous, but what can I do to make these values meaningful and to act on them and to make a change in the world for the better for obviously the indigenous people, Randy's tribe, Randy himself, and also the larger picture of fairness and justice.
And Guntram, you?
Patty and I have been together for a long time. So if you go back to 1981, that's over 40 years. And sometimes when we're together, I seem to forget that we're not one, that we are actually two separate human beings. Oftentimes we share the same ideas or we see something the same way. And to me, the exploration of the indigenous heritage of Patty, it's part of my journey too, especially when you come to a place, and as a geographer, places are important. So the medicine wheel, when we go there and we lay down tobacco, it is to the ancestors of Patty, for example, to take care of our children and to help for that. So I'm entering the circle in some ways, even though I'm fully aware that I'm not indigenous. I don't want to take on that identity, but I feel I'm invited in to be able to share it, and especially on behalf of my children. So it comes through this interaction of carrying out spiritual things. And I must admit, I mean, I'm not a deeply religious person. I grew up Christian, but it was not in any way a deeply formative element, apart from the cultural elements. And through the indigenous spirituality, I've actually allowed myself to open up to those visions, to those experiences, what you, Carolyn and Randy were talking about at the funeral. Those visions, Patty has had them. I was always extremely critical, as you would expect from a scholar. And I have come around to seeing like there is more out there, especially spending all this time with Native communities along the border, on both sides of the border, and seeing how much those spiritual elements, those connections, the eagle following us along. We, one small story, we traveled and there was this cloud that looked exactly like an eagle with the beak and everything else. And I thought I better not say anything. And Patty said to me, "Do you see the cloud?" And I said, "Yes, I see the cloud."
And it's an eagle.
And I,
the form of an eagle.
That's my answer. Thank you.
I think we're circling back to the beginning, the theme of the program, of how really encouraging and uplifting it is to see a culture that settlers and colonists tried to absolutely eradicate, entering the mainstream and like seeds thrown onto the earth. Maybe the earth wasn't as hospitable to the seeds as one would think, but you know, our two relationships are documentation that these ancestral ideas and insights and that culture, it's taking root, and it's not just taking root. There's a real hunger out there in the mainstream for what we have to offer. And I think these mixed marriages are an opportunity to build bridges between indigenous cultures and the mainstream. And I see that as our, you know, our contribution, our responsibility. And I thank you too for being part of that and for being part of our awakening. You've been mentors to us more than once.
And I'd say I'd say also one thing I think I bring to Randy's and my partnership is, since I'm non-Indigenous, much more mainstream, I'm attuned to that part of our society. And there are times when I feel I'm a reality check against Randy, as you can't go so far, so fast. If you want to communicate to the mainstream, back up, make it clear so I can understand it. So in terms of that kind of ripple effect, I think that works.
Thank you, Patty and Guntram. And yes, Patty, you had a quote you wanted to end with.
Oh, well, it's just a little, I heard this on the radio the other day, and it was a quote by Paul Wellstone, who's the late Minnesota senator. And I love this. It's like, we all do better when we all do better. And our ancestors before us had hardships. I believe they also experienced love and joy and happiness. It wasn't all like, I don't want to think it was all like a sad experience the last 400 years. And we've come far, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate them. And they would want us to thrive, be well, and be happy. And every day is a gift. And when we do well, we all do well. And that's a wonderful last thing for me to say. Because that's ultimately what I want.
Miigwech. And to our listeners, I also want to say again, Miigwech, I hope the broadcast has given you time and space to reconnect with your roots and Mother Earth and your ancestral roots. Before your busy day distracts you from this moment, I encourage you to take a few minutes to reach out and feel the presence of living flora, fauna, and perhaps even that of your ancestors. Allow yourself to touch their presence, capture that moment, and hold on to it. And also, if you will write to me and let me know about your experience, I can be contacted through my website at randykrytkowski.com, where you can also find transcripts and supplemental materials for all Indigenous perspective shows. A heartfelt Miigwech. Thank you to Patty and Guntram Erb.